Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio.
Santa came down the chimney, half past three, y'all. Left all in my good old present for my baby, for me. Merry Christmas.
Otis Redding, 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. We got the CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy coming up here in just a few. By the way, Sarah Dillon brought this to my attention. I'd like you to look at the front page of today's Oregonian. I'm just going to read this headline to you. Storm delivers vicious blow. I have nothing to say beyond that. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. So we'll talk to Ed McCarthy, and then we'll get this. I've got a guy calling in. We've got Joe calling here in a moment, and then we'll bring in Scotty J. Who I was afraid, or as Tom Sawyer would say, I was afeared that if we brought in Scotty J. later, because it went a couple hours. God damn, is it? Are we halfway through the show already? I was afraid that if we brought Scotty J. in later, that somehow his hangover would have subsided. But I asked him. If you find yourself with a little slack time today, try to sneak up behind him and just startle him with a really loud noise, just to watch him instinctively grab at his temples. He did say that the hangover, quote, is getting worse with every passing minute, so that's good. So you have that to look forward to in a few minutes. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the South, our good friend, CNN radio correspondent and man of the world, Ed McCarthy from the CNN Center in Atlanta. How are you, sir?
Oh, Rick, how am I?
You sound like you're having a great day.
I'm just having a great day. Bear with me just for a second here,
sure.
Because I'm about ready to go to the Grady Hospital and check myself into the psych ward.
Oh, okay.
This has been an unbelievable day here. We have had a day, and then I'm leaving, and we've got it all squared to do the live show with you guys, and then all of a sudden I'm like three quarters of the way home, and I'm digging around. And a cell phone. So I have a BlackBerry, so I have to message Laura on the BlackBerry, and I said, is my cell phone in the edit room in the newsroom? She says, yes. Great. So I had to turn all the way back. I caught in this massive traffic jam, and we just made it for you guys.
Well, thank you, Suwaz.
Other than that, we're doing great.
Well, you know what? The Rick Emerson Show respects and admires and is grateful for your dedication, Ed McCarthy.
Well, my stupidity is what it is.
No,
it's not my dedication. It's my stupidity. I couldn't believe that.
You know, the thing is, Ed McCarthy, here's the thing. You go the extra mile every day, without fail, every single time. And so I got to your brain is probably overtaxed.
It's overcooked. Today I want the extra 30 miles.
30 miles. Scotty typed on the screen as he put your name. He said, Ed McCarthy, ask Ed about his nervous breakdown. So
that's what I'm having right now.
Right, well, see, but you got the now. See, when the weekend comes now, if you're a CNN guy, are you on the clock over the weekend? In other words, if something happens on the weekend, do they send you out there, or do you when you go home on Friday night, you go home, unplug the phone, lock the door, and you just detox till Monday?
Yeah, you're always on the clock. You never know, what's going to happen. You can always get a call, and you're on you're on duty suddenly, but. We hope that won't be happening anytime soon here.
You do have just that slight little brittle manic edge to your voice today, as though at any point you may just begin giggling uncontrollably and then, like, throw the phone out the window and drive into an embankment.
Well, could be. Okay. And, it's funny. I did a story yesterday on distracted driving, a study.
Mm-hmm.
Today I'm one of those people.
You are that guy. Well,
here I am driving around with a cell phone, trying to change lanes, and I'm going nuts.
Man, I did this last night, and we had these winds up here, these winds that were up to 85, 90 miles an hour yesterday. And I got to tell you, I was being the guy that I always bitch about last night. I was driving home, trying to get home, wind is throwing my car around, and then I have a BlackBerry. It's called a Q, but it's a little palm-top computer, and it starts beeping at me that I'm getting some important message. So what am I doing? I've got one eye on the road, one hand on the wheel, my other eye on this little tiny 1-inch by 2-inch computer screen, my hand there, trying to access the email, reading the email, sending the email back, all the while my car is being tossed around like an empty beer can on a thoroughfare by these 85 mile an hour winds. There are literally trees falling into the road behind me. I mean, it's
people dodging trees and everything. I was terrible today. In fact, a couple of people were in accidents because all of a sudden they're trying to dodge stuff, and they have a worse fate. They hit something else.
And so what is the story? Because these winds are... what is the story of these guys on Mount Hood? I mean, is there anything new, or is it just a... When they say that they scaled down the search a little bit, is that just a fancy way of saying that they have pretty much given up on these guys?
Well, it's a pretty fancy way of saying that they can't do anything because they're just really... they're hogtied right now. They can't do anything because of the weather. And, you know, if they're up there, they're hoping they heard a ping or whatever, but they still can't get to them right now. And, and you feel terrible about the whole thing, but it's a fact of life that, it probably would be a miracle if they could get to them or if they could get down the mountain somehow, you know?
Well, and there's conflicting stories about whether these guys, is sort of whether they took supplies or whether they are adequately prepared or whatever. But the one thing, and it is very perplexing, I really do hope, find these guys, not least of which because I want to get an answer to why they decided to go up exactly the wrong way, apparently. That's the one, apparently what's making it so difficult to get to them is that they went up in, like, the most impassable section of the mountain, which is making
it
even harder.
Yeah, it's all ice, it's all sheer ice, and it's just impossible for them to get to right now, so not a good situation. I really feel bad, but
is there any news on when the weather's supposed to break, or when these guys are going to be able to give another crack at getting up there on the top of Mount Hood?
I don't know. Based on the weather you guys are getting there, it just doesn't seem like the Northwest is going to be out of that anytime soon, right? At least a day or two, doesn't it? I that's just the forecast I've been getting.
Well, I know that it was terrible last night, and it's expected to not get a whole lot better the next few days. So, all right, my friend. Well, I'll let you get back to your driving. I'll tell you what, go home, do what I do. You just go home, you shut the door, and just stare at a blank wall for about 90 minutes.
I'll have to. I think I'll have to today.
Yeah, a glass of Jameson's might help with that.
Yeah, I was close to checking in there. I said, hey, we better check into that ward and see what happens, see what that place is like.
If you do that, you got to take your phone with you so we can have an exclusive on it.
Well, exactly. You need the phone. You don't realize the stupid cell phones will paralyze you without the darn thing.
That's the thing, and you get by without it for years and years, but as soon as you have it, like this thing I got, this Motorola Q, it's like a BlackBerry, and if I had no cell phone for a long time, but then I just had a cell phone, and now I got this thing, and man, you took it away from me, my life would grind to a halt.
You'd be crying like that guy that didn't get the PlayStation 3 for Christmas in the store.
Excellent comedic callback, sir. All right, man. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good weekend, Rick. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, Ed McCarthy. There you go. Ed McCarthy. There you go, in Atlanta. CNN radio correspondent. Fantastic. It's 503-733-2970. The great thing about that guy is just that fantastic chortle of his just survived. Like, no matter what happened...
What kind of mood he's in.
They could be dragging that guy up to the electric chair, and you know that he would still just be giving it that great Ed McCarthy laugh.
So are we going to talk about Elegans and backstage and whatnot?
We will do that in just one moment. I got to get... we can actually do a great segue here. This is Joe. Joe, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How you doing, buddy?
Joe, what's up, man? You're calling about the locked gate business. Gate.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I can give you a little hint on these locked gates, at least what I've come across.
This is what we were talking about yesterday. Now, this is Tim Riley, by the way, and I want to make a careful note to point this out, that Tim Riley was the first one to mention this. We are now calling the story in manner of Watergate. We are now calling it Gate. And if anybody sees this covered by a newspaper, local television, news, anything, Tim Riley was the first to bring this up. He noted that, just a little background, he noted that there's the James Kim story, that the new the Bureau of Land Management says that the gate was never locked and that it was not locked to begin with. And yet, the TV news people at one point held up a broken lock in front of the camera, which they claim had been on the gate. And so Tim Riley's question is, what is that lock and where did it come from and who gave it to them?
Good point.
So what are your thoughts on this, James?
Well, I'll tell you thoughts on this. These locked gates and stuff.
Yes.
This last spring, my buddy and I were going up in the hills, and we went to a gate that was wide open. And we were on the property for a little bit, and we go to leave this place, and we went into a wide open gate. We go to leave this place, the gate we came in on, the damn thing was locked.
And that was it locked with a? Do you know if it was locked by just like some, not a homemade lock, but I mean just locked that some guy put on it, or was it the state?
No, it was one of the BLM locks.
See, so that's got to be a creepy feeling, too. I mean, how did you... Now, did you say you walk in or did you drive in?
We drove in. We're in my buddy's truck.
Now, how did you get out if the BLM guys had locked it?
Now, you're going to love this part. Thank you for asking. We ended up calling the police because this was late on a Sunday, and we tried to find a way out of this place. we called the police, and they basically, the cop that finally got out there, it took them 2.5 hours to drive out there. This is out in Yamhill County. It's like a 10-minute drive from downtown Yamhill. Anyway, the cop basically tells us, if I have to come up there to let you guys out, which he had a key for it, he said he's going to write us a ticket for a criminal trespass. That's a $5,000 ticket.
Did you note that, like, that you were in there and the guy locked you in?
Yeah, we told him.
And what happened?
The cop just, he basically didn't believe us.
And so did he come? Did he let you out and did he fine you?
Yes and yes. This is currently being followed up in court because and they've dropped it to a violation. But
they tried to hit you with a $5,000 fine because you got locked in by the BLM guys.
And you get a load of this. I told them, I called back to dispatch, and I had a severe eye injury, and I called them and said, look, you guys need to call 911. I need to take some eye medication stuff for my eye, and I need to get off this property. And they said, do they need to call an ambulance up there? I said, well, not to that point yet. Well, I waited and struggled for quite a while. I had something, ocular pressure, which is, you know, inside your eye.
So they're maybe not the most well-run organization, basically, is where we're at with this.
Well, let's just put it to you this way. The police officer came out there, was actually trying to bargain with us. He says, if I got to come up there, I'm going to write you a ticket for $5,000, or, a criminal trespass ticket, or you can stay there overnight and wait for one of the trucks that go through to open the gate up.
Fantastic. If you could you'd stay there overnight in the freezing cold, eat one of your companions. All right, that's Joe. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, they don't really sound like they have their act together, like in the truest sense of the word. All right, before, thank you. That's Joe, and we've got some other calls to get to, including... we got a good friend, Amanda. This is Amanda, who offered to be the official reviewer of the L.A. Gun Show. She's a massive L.A. Guns fan.
So she was there.
You know Amanda. She's a girl with a Bigger Than Jesus tattoo. Have you met her, blonde girl?
I think I have.
Yeah. So she had... we'll talk to her in a few, because she's got the official... she had sent me this long email. She's like... She helped me prep a little bit for the interview, actually, because she's like, you know, an L.A. Guns fanatic. Just, like, knew every iteration of the band, every single thing about the band. Anyway, she was there last night, so we'll get her.
You know what the greatest thing was about that show last night? Our introduction.
Oh, yeah, no.
That was the worst thing ever.
The introduction and what we did last night for L.A. Guns and Bullet Boys.
We didn't even speak after we're like, whatever.
No, it was great. And by great, I mean terrible. We'll talk about that in a second. I got to get this out of the way. So here's how we're going to segue this. Joe just called about the locked gate. So thank you, Joe. And Scotty has been badgering me to come on and make this observation about James Kim. He's just, because every time this story...
It's going to aggravate me, though.
I know. It's like a splinter, baby. It's got to come out. Because here's the thing. Every time we bring up the names James and Kim back to back, Scotty just starts typing madly on the screen
Let's do it now because we have a limited time until we have commercial break, which means he can only babble for so long.
So we got a definitive cutoff point. So we're going to bring in Scotty but here's the thing. Here's the sweet payoff, though, Sarah. This is the thing. This is like when you offer yourself a reward at the end of your workout. Like you go to the gym, but then after that, like you let yourself have like a pizza or something. Here's the thing. We'll bring in Scotty. We will pretend to listen to his observations about James Kim. We will nod. We will smile. We will go, that's very profound, Scotty. That's very interesting. And then we will move on to discussing his hangover and the L.A. Guns show last night, which was fantastic, which was the best of times, the worst of times.
Scotty J., this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
Thank you so much.
Scotty J., how are you, sir? How are you feeling? Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed?
Glad
to be alive?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Couldn't be feeling better.
Feeling good, Scotty?
No.
How's your eye?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I remember. Well, it happened right before I got there.
Yeah.
He was already in prime form.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
I'm just going to give you a little tease. And here's the thing. I'm going to have to dangle. This is what the Casey Kasem does. I'm going to dangle this little tease on the other side of this excruciating, tedious display we're about to go through. I'm just going to say this. When Scotty J showed up last night, when Scotty showed up at the L.A. Guns show, he came in and I said, hey, Scotty, how you doing? He goes, this is the worst night of my life. That's it. And I'm just going to lay that out there, and we'll talk about that in a second. And we'll talk. And you want to talk about the worst night of your life. It was a good night. It was a good show. Those guys were great. It was funny. There were some cool times last night. But there were a couple moments last night. I'll talk more about them. Sarah just nailed it when she talked about our introduction to the band. If you were there last night, you saw us introducing Bullet Boys and L.A. Guns, and that's a whole story in and of itself. And backstage, I don't want to be that guy.
Well, the Bullet Boys one was special, first of all.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll save it.
And you know that I try very hard not to be that guy going, let me tell you about cool stuff I get to do because I'm me. I don't want to be that guy because he's just sound jerky. But I just, you know, but we do it. This is, you know, I've said I'm a lucky bastard because this is a cool job. It's a good job to have. And this job lets you do some stuff that you wouldn't get to do otherwise, including going backstage at the L.A. Guns Bullet Boys thing last night.
Which is the coolest thing ever.
Totally just its own experience. It's like a world apart.
I felt like we were in some parallel universe watching other people live their lives. Like it didn't seem like it belonged in 2006.
It was pretty great. All right, so here's what we're going to do, Scotty. I'm going to look at my watch because you've been badgering me about this James Kim thing. So I'm now going to let you make your observations about James Kim for a... I don't know. I'll give you like a good 35 seconds.
Okay, well, it's not just James Kim. It's the climbers as well, and I do want to...
Are these comments going to be angering?
No, that's what I want to say. I want to say that they are not angering, and I do
Sarah's just
feel,
now over her cold yesterday.
I feel horrifically bad, and the day that they mentioned the news about James, that they found him, that was really sad for me.
Is
this a preface to something?
Oh, yes. God, he said however.
That being said...
What I want to say is, number one, I know that the media has to be neutral, but I don't think they're being neutral, and I don't understand this.
What do you mean by the media?
And what do you mean by neutral?
The news. And what I mean by neutral meaning...
You're not referring to us, are you?
Well, maybe.
Hi.
The thing is
Have you ever listened to this show?
The thing is this. You know,
is this the suburban point of view officially?
I really want to hear what's going on in his head.
Okay, so this is, we should make this a recurring segment. This is, here's Scotty J with the suburban perspective.
Unfortunately, your 35 seconds are up.
Okay, just don't be smart. Move on.
All right.
So here's the deal. All this talk about a lawsuit and the locks and all that stuff, it's ridiculous. Number one, I personally, if I was... in a forest or off a paved road and I turn on a forest road that's gravel and full of snow, at about a mile, 2 miles in, I'd probably say, you know what, this is not looking too good. I better turn around. And that's what I don't understand is how far he went to shave an hour off, you know, he was going towards the coast, right?
Well, I think he'd gone through, like, Roseburg. Or something. And you drive, the thing is that you drive through that part of the state, and I mean, those roads splinter, and you don't know what's a state road and what's not. It's not, especially when there is a sign pointing down that road that says the coast.
Okay.
I mean, I was talking to my friend Nate about this. I have a strong turn back instinct, just like he does, and I'm with you. You get 100 yards in, you know, I'm going to turn back around. But that being said, it had a government sign labeling that road as taking you to the coast.
Well, we haven't seen this sign yet.
I have seen
you
this.
You have, okay.
They have this thing called the internet.
They have the sign.
There's a series
of
tubes that allows you to be this. There's a sign.
It's veins.
Tim will talk about this. We can talk to Tim about this in the news hour. There is a sign that says, you know, like, coast, and it points down that road. I mean, he was directed down the road by a state sign.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to irritate you with all this, you know, talk about this, but I feel this needs to be said, that the other thing is, how come nobody is, unless they're just letting the story go away, but why isn't anyone talking to the wife? Like, what was going through your mind?
How do you feel?
Yeah, and
are you actually complaining that people aren't standing on the Widow Kim's porch asking her questions about her husband being dead?
No, you're twisting it. I'm just wondering.
You're mad because you haven't heard the wife's perspective on what she thinks about her husband dying.
You're mad because you are being denied the wife's thoughts on the death of her husband.
This is the thing, is I'm getting grilled right now.
You're not
being grilled.
The public wants to ask these questions, and I'm asking it.
So let me understand this.
You're
upset that the media is being unprofessional, in your opinion, yet you're also upset that they won't stand outside her house and ask her about her husband being dead.
Yeah, and her 7-month-old child who now doesn't have a father.
Yeah, it sounds horrible, doesn't it? But I want to know what was going on her mind. I want to know
why
they didn't turn back. I want to know why he continued west instead of walking back towards the pavement where he originally came in,
well,
right?
I guess my, well, first of all, the car was stuck, as I understand.
Okay, so you go back the way you came. You walk that way. You don't walk the opposite way in hopes of finding the big horizon.
Well, I don't even know how far that they were in. How far were they in from that turnoff? That's my thing.
I don't know.
Because more than a mile.
Okay, well, that's my thing. The reason he didn't is because, I mean, I would imagine. And again, I get 15 feet and then turn it back, but that's not the point. They were farther in than that, and I think the observation I would make is it wasn't just him. It was him and the wife and some very young children who you don't necessarily want to be walking through because you can't carry food, you can't carry water, and I don't really know that it would. And they tell you if you are lost to stay in the car. Now, he decided to go for help, but they stayed in the car, which is what you're supposed to do.
Right,
that's why.
It'd been over a week, so I think at that point he needed to do something.
Yeah, but that's why they didn't walk out, because anybody, like if you get your seven-month-old child walking into the woods with it, that's not very shrewd.
Right.
So that's why. I suspect these people are calling for Scotty. Hello, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
It's Paul.
Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, I just have to say is the road, have you ever been on that road that they were lost on?
Tim and I were talking about this, actually, and I'm unsure if I've been on that road or not. I know there's a lot of roads that are sort of, that look like that.
I have been, and it is a dirt road.
Yeah.
Even though it's a state highway, and yeah, you could, it's pretty easy to there's a lot of forks in it, and there's a lot of Forest Service highways and roads up there, but it's still, you know, personal responsibility. I'm sorry for the tragedy, but it is his own fault.
Oh, no. I mean, look, if the guy hadn't gone down the road, and again, I mean, I get like...
Gone down the road. Low.
I get even a little bit off the path that I think I'm supposed to be on. I absolutely turn around. And I think the guy should have had a GPS. That's the thing I don't understand. I don't understand why he didn't have a global positioning system. My point, though, is, like, it's a road identified by the state as one to take.
Well, it is.
Scotty's shaking his head like it's not true, but it is true.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I mean, the government's there to label roads, which they did, and he followed government roads and a government map.
But if you look on the state highway map from Oregon, mm-hmm. the ones they hand out, in nice little red letters, it says closed during winter.
Well, except it wasn't closed.
Clearly, it wasn't closed. It just says closed in winter.
Well,
like you go up on Hood,
okay.
And you take some of those Forest Service roads, in the wintertime, it says, on the map, it says, maybe closed in winter.
Except we do know they close roads, because that's why they're lockable, and that's why there was a debate about whether the BLM had it locked, because they do close those roads sometimes.
Well, yeah, they leave them open for hunting season. When hunting season's over, they're supposed to close.
Look, I'm not trying to say that the guy had no stake in his own responsibility. I'm really not. Yeah. I'm just saying, to say that he shouldn't have gone on a road clearly labeled by the government as a road to the coast, and that, you know, maybe closed in winter, and when the government hadn't closed it, the government had left it open.
But
the state highway where they got lost wasn't on the right road.
Yeah.
They got off on a side road, but the regular road has no gate for it.
Yeah.
All right. It's not like Wyoming where they, you know, put a gate over the freeway, road's closed.
Nothing is like Wyoming. All right, thank you, sir. All right, there you go, that's Paul. All right, Scotty.
No, evidently, I don't
Final know. Observations?
Well, I don't know if that car was four-wheel drive or not.
Nah, he's from San Francisco.
And,
probably not.
You know, just common sense. This is sad to say, but common sense. You're going on this gravel road, and it's forest, and there's snow everywhere, and you're from California. You turn back.
And you're from
California.
And you're not from these parts.
It's sunny over there.
What kind of a name is Kim, anyway?
Right. No, I feel bad. I really do.
Yes, it shines through. If what with your desire to hear the widow's thoughts about the death of her husband.
I know how I sound, but I think these questions need to be asked.
Because there's just not enough tragedy on your suburban television. There just aren't enough weeping widows on my TV at home, Rick. I demand more.
The mountain climber thing, that's a whole other day worth of talk. That's for sure. I have a thing or two I could say about a thing or two on that one.
Did you really just say that? Did you really just use the phrase, I have a thing or two I could say about a thing or two?
No.
He's such a hick.
Seriously. You want some skull to go with that? God damn. It's like I can just hear Bocephus records playing in my head.
Why are your hands covered in Band-Aids?
Oh, okay. Now, what a great segue into yesterday, the worst day of my life.
We have to break now.
We'll be
back after this. We'll talk about the worst day of Scotty J's life. We'll talk about the L.A. Guns show last night and the worst band introduction you have ever heard. Ever?
Ever.
Ever.
No, you went 2 out of 2 last night.
And Tim Riley will return as well. So more from Scotty J, more from Tim Riley later on, Jim Roop and Scott Daly. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming by. Scotty J is an effing tool. That's this email. How about this one? Dear Jesus Christ, Scotty J is an ass. That is all. 503-733-2970.
We shouldn't be mean to Scotty J. He doesn't know better.
I'm just...
He's learning.
Scotty, see, they always take it wrong. See, this is the screen. David, you have exciting news about the weather where you are?
Yeah, I'm in downtown Vancouver, like around Main Street, just in the old downtown. About 5 minutes ago, it was snowing real hard. Now it's just a little bit, but I don't understand this. It's 43 degrees out, and it's snowing.
Al Gore? Yes, I was going to say. Are you sure it's not some sort of radioactive fallout of some kind? So it was snowing where you were.
Yeah, it was, and it still is a little bit, but not as much.
All right, thank you.
Weird.
Could have some Russian spies over there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. That's David on the Rick Emerson Show.
Thank you for that.
In a few minutes, look at you. In a few minutes, we'll resume with Scotty J, and we'll talk to our good friend Amanda about it. We'll see her perspective on the L.A. Guns show as regards a few specific moments. It's the same as ours is. And we'll tell our exciting stories from backstage last night. So there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Ministry of Truth, Tim Riley!
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, you know, this had to happen. Not that we're poking fun, but we're telling actual stories here. A Gresham family has been hospitalized with carbon monoxide poisoning. This after the father brought out the family's generator, put it in the garage last night due to the power failure. The garage was left partially open, but the fumes were sucked back into the garage because the wind blew them back in. One of the adults woke up and found the children unconscious.
Oh. Yeah.
So they're at the hospital now.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
So that's that.
Okay. I thought it was just a... Okay.
No.
No,
You're in the clear. You had no idea.
No, I had no idea. No, and carbon monoxide poisoning, especially when it's like radon poisoning.
Yeah.
Radon poisoning is a funny term. There's just something amusing. But everybody's okay, right? They're all hospitalized?
Yes.
Okay. But
they're okay once they stay in the hospital.
You know, the thing about carbon monoxide poisoning is it does give you a nice rosy glow. That's the thing that people don't really appreciate about it.
So what's happening with this Willamette River? Well, in Salem, it is affecting Marion and Polk counties because it could flood there. That's a Willamette. And in Oregon City, above the falls, affecting Clackamas County. So, now, driving today, Highway 26 to the coast has been reopened. But you really don't want to go there because gas stations are closed for 100 miles.
Oh, that's bad.
From Lincoln City to Warrington, there is no place to get gas because the gas pumps need electricity, and there is none.
You know, and there's no worse feeling than when you're creeping along, like Sarah and I were swapping those stories about going home for the Christmas or whatever, going across the Nequality Pass. There is no worse feeling than when you're creeping down those mountain roads or whatever, and you're seeing your gas go like quarter tank, eighth of a tank, 16th of a tank. And then there's that horror, which happened to me one time, the horrifying moment when the light goes on and that you have 1 mile before you are out of gas and you freeze to death.
Yeah, it's a bad scene. And you're humming, "I'll be home for Christmas." So Highway 6 to the coast is closed until tomorrow. Highway 47 south of Forest Grove closed. Highway 18 between Salem and Lincoln City is closed. So you can't get to, they probably don't have any entertainment at that casino. They don't till October when till January when the Smothers Brothers come.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, now, don't they fit right in as, like, the next on our list?
I would think so, yes.
I mean, Susan Reynolds
is going there. I wonder what they're like backstage.
You know what? I bet they're a great interview. I would absolutely freaking guarantee you that they're a good...
So there's no reason to go this weekend because the Smothers Brothers aren't going to be there till January 12th and 13th.
Is there anybody there this weekend? Chinook wins?
No.
Okay, so we've had Rickles.
Yeah.
We did Don Rickles. We did Tim Conway, Harvey Korman. We were thinking Bob Newhart was the last one, but the Smothers Brothers are absolutely. We could continue our streak of interviewing that whole generation of comics while they're still around.
Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. Susan Reynolds, the Smothers Brothers. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, nobody's going to get rescued on Mount Hood today because there's a giant blizzard going on. Our government camp is without power. Timberline Lodge is running on emergency power. The snow is so bad that the Hood River County Sheriff's Office moved its search command center from Cooper Spur down to Parkdale. But other than that, these guys didn't do anything wrong.
Flawless hikers.
Attention, Scotty J. 300 got food poisoning at an Olive Garden, but not one around here. This happened back east. The customers complained about nausea, vomiting, fever, and diarrhea. It's hard to ignore. 300 of them. It happened at the Olive Garden in one of those Midwestern states, Indiana, Illinois.
State that nobody cares about.
Back to Wayne now. Donald Rumsfeld is getting the royal treatment as he concludes 6 years at the Pentagon. Just seems like yesterday. The president led a formal Pentagon farewell ceremony for the former head.
Don Rumsfeld has been at my side from the moment I took office. We've been through war together. We have shared some of the most challenging moments in our nation's history.
We have exchanged slow, lingering kisses in a janitor's closet when no one was looking.
He noted that Rumsfeld shepherded a new modernization of U.S. armed forces never before seen.
He undertook the most sweeping transformation of America's global defense posture since the start of the Cold War, repositioning our forces so they can surge quickly to deal with unexpected threats, and setting the stage for our global military presence for the next 50 years.
When I was feeling nervous, he would cup my buttocks and slowly stroke my cheeks of my face. That came out badly. I was trying to go for like a whole cuddling in times of war thing, but that didn't... never mind.
Also, Rumsfeld has... after the 9/11 attacks, he noted a sense of urgency and very real challenges ahead.
We live at a time when our enemies mix an extremist ideology with modern weaponry, and they have the ability to kill thousands, indeed even hundreds of thousands, of our people in a single, swift, deadly stroke.
When everybody knows that's really our job.
Yeah. Meanwhile, music opened the military ceremony for Donald Rumsfeld at the Pentagon.
Oh, I didn't know. The joke isn't working this time around, because I have nothing. And we're done.
Well, that was fun while it lasted, wasn't it?
The streak is over. All right. And so forth. Oh, we have breaking news from Pam. And the news apparently is that Pam is gone. There you go. Well, Pam had
some...
They're
phoning in out of juice.
Pam had some breaking news. Let's do one more here, and then we'll talk a little bit more to Scotty J.
Well, Cheryl Keeney wasn't expecting Disney on Ice when she attended the Guns N' Roses show at the Everett Events Center. But she wasn't expecting pierced or tattooed goth women stripping down to G-strings and pastries. Oh, that should be pasties.
Stripping the pastries.
And slathering each other with delicious chocolate syrup either. I've been to a lot of hardcore rock and roll concerts, and they certainly don't start with strip acts, said the 45-year-old Linwood woman.
Oh, she sounds hip.
She shelled out $75 as a lot of money up there to attend the show Sunday night. Since November, Suicide Girls, a burlesque troupe of women who model for the online erotica site www.suicidegirls.com, has opened for Guns N' Roses on its North American tour. A phone call and an email to the Suicide Girls public relations contact in West Hollywood was not immediately returned. Kinney said the Everett performance included seductive dancing and simulated sex acts, as well as nearly naked women licking chocolate syrup off each other. While the Suicide Girls were listed on event flyers, parental warnings of adult content were not. Even so, with the scantily clad dancers pushing the envelope for a Guns N' Roses show, a band known for pioneering what's known as sleaze rock? Yes, said Kinney, who decided to boo loudly at the dancers.
Was she with her teenage son?
Doesn't say.
Oh, I think the opening paragraph said that she took her kid. How embarrassing. Worst concert experience ever. Your mom standing up and booing a stripper while you're standing right. Oh,
wearing orange spandex and knitting needles in her hair.
Wearing a big ass Tigger shirt to cover her enormous suburban gut. Oh, that's fantastic. Well done, ma'am.
She said her objections to the nudity prompted members of the audience to lash out by shoving her.
Excellent. Well done.
If I were outside stripping in front of children, I'd go to jail, said Keeney, her voice still hoarse from the concert. If they want to be sleazy, that's fine, but you better card everyone going through the door.
You know, for two things. A,
it's an all-ages show.
At the Guns N' Roses show on Monday, there were three opening acts, as we discovered. I thought it was just Helmet and Sebastian Bach. I was talking to Dave Zinn about it later, and it was Helmet, Sebastian Bach, and the Suicide Girls. Now, we showed up, Sneathan and I showed up late enough that we didn't see the Suicide Girls or Helmet, but we did have that question about, what is it that the Suicide Girls would do at a Guns N' Roses show? But apparently now we know. They lick chocolate syrup off one another.
Yes.
Apparently. By the way, it's worth noting that Guns N' Roses have canceled the rest of their tour. So if you did not see them here on Monday, who knows? There's always that chance that Axl just goes nutty or whatever and you don't see him again. So they have canceled the rest of their tour. And then he put out a press release. Axl Rose released a press statement yesterday canceling the rest of their tour and, I swear to God, announcing yet another release date for Chinese Democracy. I swear to Christ.
No.
March 6th, 2007 is the new, and I believe it is actually now the 16th release date for that record in 15 years. So good times. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Tim Riley. We will revisit the Ministry of Truth in a short while. In the meantime, let's welcome back now to the Rick Emerson radio program.
Scott EJ, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
Come on!
Scotty J joining us now in the studio. Let's do a couple of these calls. We'll talk to Amanda. We'll get some of these other things. DJ, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Yes, sir. Hey, I appreciate the show, man. You had me laughing so hard I have to pull over a lot of times.
Excellent. Thank you.
Scotty's right. If you make the state police and the government responsible for every choice you make, then their only choice is to go up and personally man every gate or else take down all the signs so they won't be liable for it.
Well, I suppose, but I mean, it's, I guess... Look, and as I've said it a thousand times about the James Kim thing, I wouldn't have gone on the road because I'm a pussy. There's no way I would have done it. But on the other hand, it's like if the state has a road and the state labels the road as one to take. Well, Scotty,
here's
the thing you have to learn about the radio, Scotty, is that no one can hear you rolling your eyes.
Right, I realize that.
I'm just saying, if you label a road as one that goes to the coast, you can't really be faulted when somebody believes you. That's
but it was
my
also
thing.
It was also labeled that more or less as use at your own risk, maybe closed. And I feel really bad for the loss of these guys and what the people on Mount Hood are going through. But they made that choice. That's why they went up there, because it's a thrill. You risk death. Well, they lost.
I don't really know that James Kim was doing it because he knew he was risking death.
Well, that's true. That was another.
I think
another situation.
You're thinking of the Mount Hood guys. Yeah. All right. There you go. That's that's DJ. There you go. This email says, Scotty J sucks. Rick, dear sweet Jesus, let this be the last installment of Suburban Perspective ever. Pleased to be reminding Scotty J that they got stuck by trying to turn around to leave. Best show ever, Stephen Camby. All right, there you go. Comments on that, Scotty? Okay.
Hey, thanks for listening, Steve.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. This is... Well, let's talk to Amanda. Amanda, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hey, what's up, sister?
Hey, Rick.
So this is Amanda who... you went to L.A. Guns last night. You were going to be our official L.A. Guns reviewer and correspondent.
Yeah, it was loud.
Okay.
It was loud. That's a good summary.
That show last night, L.A. Guns, Bullet Boys, Appetite for Deception, was so... And I don't think it's just because I'm 33. I don't think it's because I'm aging. That was an unbelievably... It was like Motorhead loud.
Yeah, totally.
And
you guys were in the back, and I was way in the front.
Yeah,
so
when we stepped on stage, I saw you right down front there.
Yeah, I stayed down front.
And it was a big, echoey kind of a room. So what are your observations on the show last night?
I thought it was great. Tracy was great. Yeah, he totally shredded, of course. And I loved that he has a chick guitar tech. That's cool.
A what?
A chick.
His guitar tech is
that
a
sounded
girl.
Like something else. It sounded like something that sounds like
Rick,
chick.
Rick's all fast gun on
the... I'm reaching for the dumb button.
Yeah,
you know, Tracy Guns looked pretty good.
He was, I don't know what you were talking about, he was very handsome.
What do you mean I'm talking about this?
Well, maybe it wasn't, you know, one of my friends told me that he wasn't good looking.
Well, you can tell he's lived a rock and roll life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sarah, I coined a great phrase last night. Sarah was noting that she said, he's a little pockmarked. And I said, you know, because he's a rugged life, you know, whatever. He's got kind of some pockmarks. And I said, no, those are rock marks. So he's rock marked.
No, but I was saying, like, even though his face is pockmarked, he was very attractive.
He was a handsome man in a sort of rugged kind of way. Yeah, he was
self-confident, just really, really nice to talk to.
The cool thing about him is that, and this is what I was saying this to somebody the other day, to James Robinson, who works here, that I was saying that the thing about Tracy Guns is, you interview a lot of, like, young rock stars, and, you know, like, I've met a lot of people, but I've interviewed some young guys who have their first taste of success or whatever, and they're always just big, and they're just a-holes and whatever, and they're just big, mouthy, obnoxious bastards. And, you know, the thing about Tracy Guns is, you know, yeah, he's not the most famous guy in the world, but he's been there. He's done, you know, he's been a rock star. He's been a rock star for a long time, and he was just so mellow. He's a guy who has that, like, he knows that his that he has a certain place in rock history, and he doesn't have to prove it, and he's just, like, very laid back, very calm, totally mellow, totally cool. And then the Bullet Boys. I don't know what your thoughts on the Bullet Boys are.
I was not actually that excited about Bullet Boys, and I was totally impressed by them. I thought they did a great song set and did a lot of songs that, you know, people would know and stuff. They attempted, and so that was cool. And so, yeah, I was really impressed with his voice and stuff, and I got to talk to him afterwards and everything. So, he's been through a lot, and it's I thought his voice sounded great. I thought they played, the guitarist was great. I really thought that band was great. I thought they did excellent. They kind of stole it, I thought.
Yeah, my favorite part was his, like, total mental breakdown about his divorce on stage.
Which I missed. You told me about it, but I was out of the room.
I'm making that my MySpace quote today when he's talking about his,
this
you
is
know,
Mark Torian from
his
Bullet Boys.
Effing bitch of an ex-wife and all this stuff, and he's like, I swear.
Let me bleep that.
Blanky-blank. Yeah, you got it.
No, rather be a has-been than a never-was, you effing bitch.
You blanking bitch.
Yeah.
It was awesome, but then I felt kind of bad because he had this whole thing about not being able to see his kids and stuff.
No, but and the one thing I'll say about the Bullet Boys last night is they played that like it was an arena. They didn't play it like it was a
and
bar.
Those guys were really nice too.
The Bullet Boys, they were really cool. They were very cool. So, Amanda, I'm glad you had a good time. And were you there for Appetite for Deception?
Yeah, which was great, except it was funny to look to the right and see Eddie Van Halen jumping.
We should talk about that for a second. So, Appetite for Deception, which is a Guns N' Roses tribute band, and my friend Andrew Green was drumming for them, so I was kind of excited to go see them. And he was the Bigger Than Jesus drummer and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I'm like, well, I want to see those guys. So, first of all, they were, like, way better than Guns N' Roses was on Monday. They were so much better than the actual Guns N' Roses. And B, yeah, so there's Duff, and then there's the guy playing Izzy, and the guy playing Axl, and Andrew is playing Steven Adler. And then instead of Slash, they have a guy dressed as Eddie Van Halen. And I found out later from Andrew that their Slash couldn't make it. So literally, they started calling other tribute bands. And they're like, do you have anybody who's free tonight? And the only guy who was free was a guy from a Van Halen tribute band. Which is why he had that 5150 guitar and, like, the Van Halen, the bib overalls. So they sounded great, though.
They were the highlight, I
totally
think.
They were great. Amanda, glad you had a good time. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
There you go. There's Amanda, ladies and gentlemen. Amanda Hug and Kiss is what I think of every time I talk there. I'm looking for Amanda Hug and Kiss. So Appetite for Deception was great. Bullet Boys, boy, he seemed really wired. Let me put it that way. Mark from the Bullet Boys. He was that's a guy that was high on life. I'll tell you that. And you notice this, that he didn't really look at the crowd. Like, he's on stage, and somebody emailed me about this, and they made this observation about the Bullet Boys, is that the front man, he wasn't looking at the crowd. It's like he was making eye contact with people only he could see, like, sort of, like about 2 or 3 feet above everybody's heads. It was as though there was, another person way in the back that he was looking at. And that's who he was doing the whole show to, was, like, some invisible 8-foot person we couldn't quite see.
Yeah, he had kind of, like, crazy wandering eyes a little.
Yeah, he looked a little manic.
You were up there. Was it hard to see people in the audience because of the lights?
No, I could see the laughter on everyone's faces as I mangled both of my
introductions. Okay, yeah, so speaking of the Bullet Boys, so that was the best thing ever when... Oh, Rick, you do well under pressure, and I was really proud of you because you were really nervous after we'd just gone upstairs on stage, or, you know, backstage.
So we went, we go backstage.
Which was so cool.
And again, I don't say that to be like, look, we're players. I mean, we were surprised, I think, because we were...
I didn't think that we'd be able to.
We were down on the floor just kind of watching Appetite for Deception. They finished, and they were doing the changeover or whatever, and the guy from Outlaws comes over. And he's like, hey, Tracy Guns wants to meet you guys. And I'm like, totally like a Scooby. And he's just like, no, Tracy, you know, he thought the interview was really good. It's like the bar is set so low for good interviews because, you know, those guys talk to every idiot DJ. And so it's like, if you just string together a coherent sentence, they think you're great. And he's like, yeah, Tracy Guns wants to meet you guys. He liked the interview. I'm like, freaking A, yeah, look at me. And I'm like telling everybody, I got to go backstage. Tracy Guns wants to meet me, you know. And so Sarah and I go.
He's requesting me.
Yeah, Tracy Guns requests an audience with Rick Emerson. I'll be back. I have to go meet with Tracy Guns. Pardon me, I'm going to meet Tracy Guns. Excuse me. I have to get through here. Tracy Guns wants to talk to me. And so Sarah and I, we go back backstage where the Bullet Boys and Tracy Guns were. And it was... I don't know who can give the better perspective, Sarah or myself, because I sort of lived through that era, and Sarah was a lot younger and didn't. It was like you opened a door and you suddenly were in 1986.
It was weird. I've never seen anything like it. I felt like, you know, being 26, like all I saw were the videos and everything.
Yeah.
I felt like I stepped backstage in like 1986 or 87. Like you walk upstairs, people, like shirtless men with all these weird tattoos with long hair.
Rail thin.
Playing pool. Other guys sitting there with a couple chicks flanked on either side, like playing their guitar.
Yeah.
And like humming. There's chain smoking. Like,
everybody,
someone drinking out of the bottle.
Yeah.
It was a parallel world. I felt like we were just kind of placed in there and got to watch it for a few minutes.
Totally.
And then escorted out.
And we'll talk about my stage introductions here in a second, and then we'll get some calls, and then we have Scott Dowling, more from Tim Riley. So we're at the Elegance Bullet Boy show last night, and that's a whole weird statement to say in and of itself, and I'll talk about that in a second. But Sarah's totally right. So we go backstage, and it was, I felt like that kid at the end of Detroit Rock City where he goes backstage and just blows his mind or somebody, because rock has just changed so much in the last 20 years. It's just so different than it used to be. I don't understand if it's better or worse. It's just different. But yeah, we go backstage, and she's totally right. It is like you walked into some Motley Crue video where there's a bunch of pool tables, dudes sitting around with their guitars, just jamming. They've all got the long hair. They all are just size ones. You know, the guys all weigh 110 pounds. They're covered in tattoos. Yeah, a lot of them are shirtless, or they got the shredded tank top. Cigarette smoke everywhere. I saw an open bottle of Jack Daniels up there. Guys totally drinking the long neck. They're like playing solos to themselves.
And they're like talking with their arms around each other, like laughing, and you know which girl they're going to hook up with.
Totally.
It was weird.
At one point, there was a girl walking around upstairs with a half shirt and panties on. That was it. She had clear heels.
Yep, serving drinks, and then she escorted a couple of the other guys in to the dancing room.
To the stripping room. And, I mean, it was just, and then, you know, and I'm up there, and the guy says, hey, Tracy, this is Rick Emerson. You know, this is Sarah. They did the interview with him. The guy's like, hey, I'm Tracy Guns. And it was just, like, so, it was totally the Wayne and Garth, like, you know, yeah, we'll just hang here with Alice Cooper, you know. And and I'll admit this, I'm not the world's biggest Bullet Boys fan. Like, even back in the day, I wasn't. In the 80s, I was not even a huge Bullet Boys fan. But, I mean, but for a brief window of time, those guys were big rock stars. And there are bands like that now that in 20 years will be, you know, that we won't remember them a whole lot. But they are rock stars. I don't know who that is right now. But there's a band right now out there somewhere that's getting a couple big hits, you know. And for their brief window of time, they're big. They're a big deal. And I remember watching the Bullet Boys on MTV, and my friend Brian had their cassette and just played it constantly. And he just thought, and Nate was like that too, Sarah's boyfriend, Nate, he's like, you know, there was a time when I thought these were the coolest guys on planet Earth. And I'm not trying to knock him. Again, you know what? I'm not a rock star. I'm never going to be a rock star. Say whatever you want about those guys. But for a while, I mean, I remember Bullet Boys coming to town with Winger and Cinderella, and it's easy to roll your eyes and kind of smirk at that kind of stuff. But you know what? I remember those guys coming to town and selling out like 30 and 35,000 seat arenas. You know what? And there's a handful of guys in any given era that can do that. And so I meet the Bullet Boys. I meet L.A. Guns. And the guy's like, hey, so do you want to introduce Bullet Boys too? And I'm like, hell yeah, you know. And so, and Sarah's trying to save her voice. So I'm like, Sarah, you know what, I'll bring you on. We'll introduce L.A. Guns later. I'll introduce the Bullet Boys. And, you know, you just hang out, whatever. Scotty, you probably want to, that's probably Roop. You probably want to talk to him briefly. We're running a little behind here. But, so the guy takes me down. He's like, okay, I'll tell you what, bring on stage. Have you introduced Bullet Boys? You just say, you know, like, hey, are you ready to rock or whatever? And then you get off stage. I'm like, that's fine, no problem. So it's not like it is at sort of like a big, because I've done a couple big introductions. Like I've told the story. The highlight of my life is I introduced George Thorogood at the Gorge, which is, I don't even know how many people that is. The Gorge is like, I mean, it's thousands.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool because or like Conway and Corman, and that's, you know, where you say like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Conway, and then the curtain opens or whatever, or like at Thorogood, where I'm at the Gorge, where I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, George Thorogood, and then he bounds on stage from off stage. When you're a place like Outlaw, sort of a smaller venue, the band is already on stage. They're already standing there. And so you walk up, and you're like, ladies and gentlemen, come on, you know, Bullet Boys or whatever, and they're already there. So I walk on stage last night at Outlaws, and again, it's not like, I mean, again, even at the Schnitzer, that's like 3,000 people. Outlaws, I don't know, however many hundred it is, but I mean, it's, you know, it's an intimate venue. So I walk on stage, and the Bullet Boys are all there, and I walk up to the mic, and I say, hey, thanks for coming on down, you know, I'm Rick Emerson, or thanks for coming to Outlaws. And I'm going through in my head all the stuff I got to say. I got to say, like, stick around. L.A. Guns is coming up. And I got to, you know, the guy tells me, he's like, be sure to mention the sponsors. I'm like, okay, so I got it in my head. Okay, I got to mention the sponsors. I got to mention that L.A. Guns is coming up. I got to thank the venue. I got to, you know, do all, I got to mention the radio station. I got to do all this stuff. And as I'm getting ready to, like, lead up to, hey, I'm Rick Emerson from AM 970 Solid State Radio. Thanks for coming. I look over and I see Mark, frontman for the Bullet Boys, like, tuning his guitar. And for just the weirdest moment, I had one of those surreal experiences where your whole brain just goes, your vision just goes wobbly for a second, and your brain just starts to get a little shaky, because I had
He hypnotized you?
It really is just, I looked over, and for, yeah, I looked over, and I was captivated by the Bullet Boy's charm. No, I looked over, and for a minute, I just for a fraction of a second, I'm like, this is the guy that I saw on MTV as a kid. This is the guy that I saw his videos, and we had his record and whatever. And just for that 1 minute in my head, it was like a warring series of voices, where like the one voice was like, all right, let's get through this. Mention the sponsors, mention the client, mention the radio station. We'll be off stage, and you'll be done. And then in the back of my head, there's another voice going, dude, it's the Bullet Boys. You're on stage with them. And voice number one's going, stop it, voice number two. I gotta mention the sponsors. No, come on. This is the best thing ever. And voice number one is trying to get through it. And voice number two is freaking out about the fact that I'm on stage with these guys who I used to watch on MTV. And so these two things are going on in my head. And I'm letting myself get psyched out by the fact that I'm on stage with these guys who were big rock stars when I was a kid. And so I got through the entire Bullet Boys introduction flawlessly last night, except for my own name. And if you were there last night, Adrian, I'm looking in your direction. And that's how, when Scotty said, can you see the audience? Yes, I saw the audience, and I could see the look on Adrian's face as I mangled my own goddamned name last night. So here's what you heard last night, if you saw me introducing the Bullet Boys. Thanks for coming out to Outlaws. We want to thank our sponsors, blah, blah, blah,
and
blah, blah.
And you're swearing profusely, too.
Well, I'm trying to bring the rock. Or, you know, Portland, MF, and Oregon, and, you know, and I'm leading up to...
No, I totally saw you living out a dream last night. It was so cute.
And then what did I say? I'm Rick Humes.
You said Emerson.
And then I stopped.
Emerson.
I stopped and I kind of shake my head. I shake it off and I go, Rick Emerson, Solid State Radio, AM 97. See, I'm angling it now. So I got everything right except my own friggin' name. Couldn't say my own goddamn name correctly on stage.
It wasn't. Yeah, it was.
Well, let's bring on Jim Rubin. We'll finish the second half of the story, and then we'll have Tim Riley
from
the Ministry of Truth.
We'll
you were so behind though, but we got
it's
it.
It's okay.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Jim Rubin. Hello, sir.
You gotta take a break. Go ahead.
No, it's fine.
Oh no, it's already bumped.
We'll have you here for this story, Jim Rubin from CNN Los Angeles. So we had a kind of the station sponsored a rock show last night.
Yeah, so I hear.
Some 80s bands, LA Guns and Bullet Boys. By the way, you're listening to KCMD AM Portland. So I mangled the Bullet Boys introduction last night by forgetting my own name. So excited am I to be on stage with the Bullet Boys.
It was adorable.
The best part, by the way, the Bullet Boys set is at the end when they made the crowd, like, work to get to hear the hit single, which is a song called Smooth Up. And that was, like, the Bullet Boys' big hit back in the 80s, back in the day. And so he gets to, like, he sings the first line of the song. And he sings the first line, and the audience is like, hit single. And then he just stops. And he actually says, he goes, you got to cheer a lot louder than that. If you don't cheer any louder, I'm going to walk on stage, and I'm not even going to play the effing song. And you're like, and I actually cheered for that. I'm like, right on. I'm like, he's just so upfront about
it. Yeah, that got all of us.
No, he totally just made us work like circus seals to hear the hit single. So Bullet Boys play their whole set. And then here comes the headliner, L.A. Guns. And so Sarah and I are back there. We're getting ready to walk on stage. And again, in a smaller venue like this, the band is already on stage. Already on...
It's hailing.
Is it hailing?
Yeah. Big
right
hail
where
truck.
We are?
Yeah, it's hailing where we are.
All right.
I'm sorry.
To get this done. So we'll finish the story, then we'll bring on Tim Riley. We'll talk to Jim Roop. We'll get everything caught up. So the L.A. Guns is already on stage. And I'm already psyched out now because I have literally forgotten my own name once in the course of the evening. And I'm like, okay, Emerson, you got to pull the second one off. You can't screw up two band introductions. Because I always, it's a point of pride with me that I don't fold under pressure. That if I have to walk on stage in front of a lot of people, I keep it together. Yeah, I'm floating on cloud nine still that I didn't screw up the Tim Conway, Harvey Korman thing weeks ago. And so I walk on stage. The LA Guns guys are already on stage. Sarah and I walk on. The LA Guns guys do that thing that they hit the one big power chord, and I'm like, all right. And the LA Guns road manager has given me this whole thing I'm supposed to say about, hey, tonight's performance is being taped for a future live release, so be loud. Get crazy, Portland. He's given me all of the stuff that he wants me to say.
And you've had to actually say it back to him like two or three times so that you get it correct.
Totally. And I've had to demonstrate that I've got it committed to memory because I want to, you know, make the band happy and whatever. He knows I'm supposed to say that. Everybody knows that I've got this long stage rep I've got to do, except for the guys in the band. And so Sarah and I walk on stage. We stand at the microphone, and the lead singer, who's about 3 feet away from me, looks over at me, and he puts his arms up. Is like, what are you doing here? Who are you? And I'm trying to go, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's broadcast. And the band just starts playing. And the singer just shouts over me. And I'm going, so thanks for coming down to Outlook. I'm Rick Emerson from AM 970. And meanwhile, the singer just starts going, we're LA Guns! And then they just start playing. And then they just start rocking. And Sarah and I look at each other and we're like, well, F it, we're done. And so we just walk off stage. So both my stage introductions, both of them disasters last night. Weeks to prepare, both of them implosions.
Oh, goodness gracious.
It was really the best. I hope it's on tape somewhere. I really hope, just so I can watch it over and over and over again, thousands of times. How are you, Jim Roop?
I'm a lot better. I didn't go Don Rickles on myself, so I'm okay.
Dude, it was fantastic. It really was.
Yeah, there wasn't even any anger afterward. We just laughed.
No, afterwards.
it was comical.
It was. It really was hilarious in its own weird, horrible way. So, anyway, so that's my night. That's what I did. Good God Almighty. All right. Here's the thing. We're behind, and I apologize. This is nobody's fault but our own.
We're good.
So, because we got to get to our news desk here, and we have to do some other stuff. But real quickly, later on in this hour, we're going to be talking to our movie review guy. And I didn't know, I thought this wasn't out for a couple weeks, but this movie Blood Diamond comes out today.
It's out today, yeah.
Out today. And so, is this set, do we know if this is set in the past, the present?
Yeah, it's the past. It's the late 90s in Sierra Leone when all that civil unrest was going on, that diamond genocide, if you will, was happening.
Right.
And the diamonds being cultivated and sold, and the war and all that stuff was being financed through all of that. That's where that, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Kimberley Process. It was enacted in 2002. It's a process that ensures that 99% of the diamonds in circulation are not from areas involved in conflicts.
Right.
And Sierra Leone right now is one of those areas that's not involved in a conflict. But those are the poorest of the poorest of the poor in this entire world. And that's all they have, is digging for diamonds to live. And I guess the diamond industry, or people like Oprah Winfrey and everyone else who's actively involved in saving Sierra Leone, want to make sure that this movie doesn't result in a boycott, because people think all the stuff's going on there now.
Oh, I see. So they want to make sure that
they boycott it, then those people suffer even more.
So they want to make sure that it's not misunderstood as this big sweeping indictment of everything.
Yeah,
all right.
Right, okay. Exactly. Then everything's fine. Go buy your sweetie a diamond for Christmas. You know, you're not financing any genocide.
Is there any word on whether the movie's any good?
I hear it's great. I've not seen it. I've heard it's absolutely fantastic. And out of the two movies Leonardo DiCaprio was in, The Departed and this one is definitely his best performance, a more mature and a better performance, and just a great movie all the way around.
I'm a fan of that guy. I really am.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
All right.
When it comes to DVD.
Jim Roop, let me just tell you this.
Yeah.
If you ever have to introduce the Bullet Boys or LA Guns, work really hard on remembering your own name.
I promise.
I wish you'd seen that last night. I'm Rick Emerson, from A&M, and then I look, and the best thing about this is that right as I'm mangling my own name, I happen to catch eye contact with a listener in the audience who I know pretty well, who is pointing at me, laughing, and miming the choke sign at me.
I understand.
Yeah, it's fantastic. All right, brother, enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
There you go, Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Do we have to break, or should we go to the news desk now?
We can go to the news desk.
Okay, Tim Riley will join us.
May I please point out that it's snowing here?
Mere seconds from now. And we'll talk
snowing
about
where
how
you
it's
are.
Hailing where we are. Is it snow or is it hail?
It looks like it's snow now. It was hail now.
It's 503-733-2970. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let us now go to the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Now it's snowing downtown. We understand it's snowing in the coupe.
Scott says it's snowing in Scappoose or St. Helens or whatever town they live in out there. So it's snowing someplace. And the weird thing is, it's like 40-something degrees, so it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, boy, that ride home's going to be fun.
Also, Highway 18 opened up at 1 o'clock now. It was closed, so you can get on that at Grand Ronde. He says some trees had blown down. So they finished clearing up the trees, and now you get over the coast.
So we know this is hail and not snow.
But we don't know for
snow
a fact.
And,
we haven't held a formal investigation into it.
We should send Scotty to stand outside.
Maybe
that's
a great idea.
Maybe send him to a Dixie cup or something and bring it back in. Yes, we can examine it more closely.
Let's have him collect it.
You bring us the precipitation, please.
Here's something a little frightening. In Lincoln City, a boat has washed up on shore. The question is, what happened to the people in the boat?
Oh, that is creepy.
Mm-hmm. Now, apparently, the owner told officials he hired a crew to sail the boat from South Africa to Seattle. It was the last seen leaving San Francisco December 8th. And it washed up on the shore, upside down.
See, that just unnerves me. That reminds me of that movie Open Water. That's just a whole lot of find them in the belly of a shark 3 months from now.
Oh, here's a scary picture. That's Liza Minnelli.
Are you kidding me?
She looks like Rosie O'Donnell.
She looks like a retarded boy. She does. Look, God love her. She looks like a kid that rides the bus with me sometimes.
Or the Max.
Yeah, seriously. All right.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley.
All right.
So that's that.
All right.
So it is snowing and sleeting in some spots. Also, Highway 26 has just reopened.
All right.
That's that.
All right, lady. Well, let's take a break here. We'll try to get caught up, and we will do a full visit to the Ministry of Truth at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back with these calls. We've got some people very patient with us. We'll get these calls here. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com and Tim Riley from the Ministry of Truth. And more about Scotty J's worst night ever. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid States Radio. Don't go anywhere.